This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. It is December 27th. We're live. Let's see. It is the sixth day of Hanukkah. So happy Hanukkah for those of you who celebrate. It is the second day of Kwanzaa, and it's 2 days after Christmas. So whichever holidays you're celebrating, have happy ones, okay? Also, if you were paying attention, we promoted this show for our guest, Dixie De La Tour of Body Storytelling, and Dixie had an emergency. So we will be airing a show with Dixie, and you will be able to hear dirty stories. It's just not tonight, but look for it on the calendar. Look for it on my social media because that's coming. I also do want to give you a content alert for today's show. Of course, I always want people to take care of themselves and do what you need to do. So today we're going to be talking about sexual assault, consent violations, and trauma. So if you want to pause or shut me off altogether, you can do that. Let me tell you about my guests. Jiminika Eborn has worked in mental health for the last 10 years, which is where she saw the need for sex education and sexual trauma support. This led to her passion for assisting and supporting those that are sexual assault survivors and those without access to comprehensive sex education. She's the creator and the host of the podcast Trauma Queen, where she has conversations with survivors, therapists, partners, educators, and experts. The goal of Trauma Queen is to normalize talking about assault and healing for us all by highlighting active and productive steps forward for survivors and allies, answering the ultimate question, how can we collectively continue to heal? Jiminika's compassion and passion has pushed her to continue building safe spaces and sharing education with her listeners and her clients. She's a comprehensive sex educator for grades K through 12, Director of Education for Survivor and Ally Support in the organization More Than No, and she consults on TV and film to bring a healthy perspective on sex and surviving trauma into everyone's home. Please welcome Jiminika Eborn. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, so you're on vacation. I just have to say, like, we had a last minute cancellation. I emailed you and you're on vacation. So the fact that you showed up to do this is, I feel really thankful. Thank you. Because
yeah,
you're supposed to
no
be
worries.
Like relaxing.
It's coming. It's literally
it's coming. Okay. It's coming. It's coming in just one short hour.
Yeah, it really is.
So you work at the intersection of sex, sex ed, and trauma. How did you specifically get into working in trauma?
Yeah, totally. So I always say that I am a child of trauma. I'm going to say a hard thing. My mother was murdered when I was a child and they found me with her body, which led me to wanting to support domestic violence survivors. And as I was in school for figuring out how I wanted to do that, I thought I had to do like criminal justice and whatnot. I actually was raped my second year of college. And it kind of just changed everything. But I mean, it changed it for a path that I think I was destined to be doing anyway. From there, I got kicked out of school because I couldn't focus, and my coping skill was having a lot of sex and drinking a lot, therefore not going to any of the classes. And then getting kicked out of school was the best thing for me. I tried to get out multiple times. I ended up going back to school for psychology. And as you said before, while I was in school, I was working my way through different mental health facilities. So I was a rape crisis counselor. I worked with juvenile sex offenders. I worked with teenagers. I worked with the elderly. I've worked with specifically folks that had lots of money. I've worked with folks that didn't have a lot of money. So I've kind of been all over the gamut.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really intense. Thank you for sharing it. Did you feel specifically that you didn't get support from your college around the rape?
I didn't tell anyone. So there was no one to support me because I did not tell them. I just told my family and my friends within the last 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I asked because, you know, we hear countless cases of survivors having to leave school and not the perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And it's because they don't get enough support from the administration on campus through mental health services. So I know that that's an issue for folks who experience trauma on college campuses. I saw it firsthand when I was an undergrad, which is 25 years ago, but I'm not sure that much has changed with all the stories that I hear.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't. That's the hard part.
What do you think is most important when dealing with this intersection of sex ed and trauma? What does it mean for you to work in that intersection?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of opportunity to be honest and truthful. I find that, you know, growing up with sex ed, it was a lot of just don't do and not really giving information. And as I work with sexual assault survivors, they want information. And as I teach the youth, they want information. And so being honest with them and being like, hey, here's what I know. I don't know everything, but here's what I do know. And let me seek out the information to be able to support you the best that I can. So it's like being honest with the knowledge and also being honest with the person's feelings. One of the things that I hear over and over again when I do teach or when I do support survivors is that I don't belittle them, that I talk to them and I don't talk at them. And I think a lot of times when you are in schools or whatnot, people are talking at you and they're talking down to you versus meeting people where they are. Like when I'm working with survivors, I'm like, this is shitty, not, oh, well, oh no. Like, I'm not going to say, oh no. Yet they know it's rough. Like, I want to acknowledge that this is a shitty thing and let's figure out what kind of support you need. And if you don't need it right now, we will figure out what you do need in the future kind of thing.
I mean, I know there's been a trend, and I hate that word, towards trauma-informed healthcare in the last decade, which, by the way, why did we just get around to that? but I mean, I don't know that sex education for young people or for adults includes discussions of trauma. Is that your experience?
Yeah, totally. I think there's a lot of people that shy away from it because they are nervous of how the conversation's going to go. And or there's a lot of people that have had trauma in their past and they haven't dealt with it. So they don't have those conversations.
And it also seems to me that there used to be this whole rush of books written by feminists about reclaiming your power after sexual assault, but they never talked about sex.
Yeah, I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again. Fornicate is one of my favorite words.
right, because it's like it's left out of the conversation and you're like, wait, yeah. But right.
And some people don't, and that's totally okay. But a lot of people that reach out to me, they're like, so I'm trying to do it. And I would love support on how to do it again. And I'm like, I hear you. Because a lot of us are, you know, have those urges and are sexual beings. So why should they be?
Yeah. And don't want to like let go of that entirely.
No, and they shouldn't have to. Unfortunately, a lot of people are like, well, aren't you sad? Like, yeah, people are sad and they deal with it, but also they want to continue on with their lives.
What do you think is the number one thing that people get wrong? Like one of the things you said is when you talk to survivors, you often, you talk to them and not at them. What are some other big missteps when people are dealing with sexual assault survivors? And that's as a friend, as a peer, as a counselor.
Yeah, I've found that a lot of people try to put their own thoughts and feelings before the survivor. Or they're like, well, I saw this on TV, you should do this. Instead of actually asking them what they want and or what they need. So it's like pushing, well, I heard this and this and you should do this. Like, how about you check in with the person and actually acknowledge that they're there versus putting your stuff on them?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, we have a lot more to talk about, but we're going to take our first commercial break. And I'm going to say thank you to my sponsors, Pleasure Chest and Lust Cinema. They are the folks who support me, so you should go support them. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion about sexual trauma. Stay with us. Hey everyone, it's the holiday season and there is so much going on at the Pleasure Chest, you should probably get a pen and take notes. First, their holiday kits are now in stock and they start at just $25. They come in beautifully wrapped gift boxes. And pleasure checks are back. Spend $100 and receive a pleasure check gift voucher for $15. Spend $150 and receive a check for $25. This is available in-store only through December 31st, and they're redeemable during any future store visit through March 31st, 2020. Fine print cannot be combined with any other offers or discounts. It's also time for 12 days of giveaways. The Pleasure Chest is ready to stock your stuffings with the latest and greatest new toys and a few classics. From December 14th to the 26th, check Pleasure Chest's social media, and you may have a chance to win. Follow them on Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores. Plus, there's 10% off all orders over $200 through January 1st, online only. And finally, free shipping from the 10th to the 19th, which is the last day to order if you want to get it by Christmas. Go to pleasurechest.com and take advantage of these amazing specials. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it, and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me in my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Jiminika Eborn, again, as a content alert, about sexual assault and trauma. I'm wondering, Jiminika, I mean, I think living under white supremacy and the patriarchy, survivors are often just are not believed, are discarded, but I'm wondering if you have seen a specific reaction, you know, in the last few years, because the man in the White House has been accused by multiple women about sexual misconduct, consent violations, sexual assault. And I'm wondering if you've seen how that's like affected the psyche of survivors to see this sort of collective non-action play out on a national stage.
Yeah, I've actually had a lot of conversations. I actually lead a support group for survivors. And a lot of the conversation that comes up is, why do I even come forward? Like, what's the point? If no one is going to believe me and I'm just going to have to keep telling my story and more people are just going to discourage it. So I have found like a lot more people are like, basically like, fuck it. That they're just like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Like, I'm tired. I want to get through it. And it's not that they don't want people to be held accountable, but there's so much being pushed against them and or how they've seen how other cases have gone. It's just really, it's really sad. And it's really hard for people to feel like there's some type of hope that people are going to be held accountable.
And if not through the criminal justice system, how do you feel like, I asked this question several weeks ago on a show, and then I had a bunch of callers call in and say, like, if you are a survivor, tell me what justice looks like for you. So if not the criminal justice system, what does justice look like for people?
I think it varies. I think some people want people to just acknowledge the harm that they've done. You know, maybe put some money towards medical care. Like, I think it varies per case and per person. Like, there's no blanket of, this is how you fix being a trash human. No, because everyone's situation is different. Everyone's relationship with their perpetrator looks different. So I think it definitely varies.
I was in a class about a couple months ago, and the person teaching it was a psychologist, and she was talking about attachment theories, different theories of attachment. And one of the things, she like brought up a slide and said, here are the ways in which like kids develop problematic or dysfunctional attachment styles. And one of them was parent experiences trauma. And I wanted to raise my hand right then and there and be like, wait, what? So if that's like a factor, then doesn't everyone have like an insecure or an avoidant or whatever attachment style? Because it made it seem like there's like a subset, a small percentage of parents who experience trauma, and therefore it like leads to these attachment things. And I'm just thinking like, wait, but don't most people experience trauma and then those people become parents? I mean, what do you think about these theories of kind of intergenerational trauma and how that plays out?
Yeah. So first, I think everyone has had some type of trauma in their life. I think there's different variants. And so when people are like, I've never had any trauma, I'm like, no, maybe you've suppressed it. I don't know. Maybe you should talk to someone. But when we're talking about intergenerational, I personally believe that there's trauma that's passed down. I'm actually finishing up grad school again in health psychology in talking about like how the trauma that we hold is actually within our bodies. And I was reading something a few months ago about how it's actually possibly connected within our DNA. So I think it can be passed down to us, but I also believe that we are able to break the cycle. Like, just because all of these bad things have happened, like my sperm donor is a murderer. They murdered my mother. That does not mean that I'm going to continue that path, right? Like, I have chosen to do hard work and go to therapy and figure out myself and like the disconnect with that being a part of my life. Like, I don't think that it shouldn't just be an easy out to say like, oh, it's generational trauma. Yeah, I do believe that there's generational trauma. I think there's more generational trauma depending on your race, your ethnicity, the different types of environments you were raised in. I think there's a lot that go into it. But I also believe that we can revert from that.
Okay, so let's talk about race and ethnicity. Mm-hmm. How does that impact how folks experience and heal from trauma?
Yeah, I mean, as a Black queer woman, it's really hard. Like, for one, we are constantly on alert that someone's not going to believe us, that someone's going to harm us, that we're over-sexualized. Black and brown folks with melanin are over-sexualized more so. Do I think that there's more opportunity for white women, white men? Yes. I think there's more affordability. I think there's more believability. I think there's more trust. Also, it's like historically, these bodies have been used and abused. Mm-hmm. So they've been discounted. And working in mental health facilities, again, I've worked in from the Malibu expensive $50,000 for a month to the lower end. And in the gamut, there's still more support and more acceptance for those that do not have melanin in their skin, which is really sad.
And do you feel like that's on the level of services or also the level of communities and families?
I think it's both. I think it's how people are raised. I know specifically in Black culture, we can be very secretive. We like to keep things in home. And I think that's a lot against other cultures as well. So families are really hard. And some people don't believe in mental health support and they believe in keeping things quiet. And then with facilities or support, I think there's just a lack thereof and they're not in specific areas that necessarily also need it.
Right. Right. I mean, we have a sort of mental health crisis in America,
sure.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And it affects the most vulnerable, in our population. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a healthcare crisis, but there's a different mental health care thing, which is that there's just not enough access and probably not even enough, enough of an infrastructure so that anyone could get therapy.
Yeah, it's definitely out of reach for a lot of individuals. That's why I try to do, free things. I try to do as many low discount things and sales and try to do things with different therapy services to give free therapy to individuals because I do understand. And that's kind of the reason why I created my retreat, because of that.
Yeah, let's talk about your retreat. It's called Tending the Garden.
It is.
It's April 1st to the 6th. If you want to know more, it's tendingthegarden.love. I don't know when the .love came about, but I want to change all my websites to .love.
I just tried saying. It one day and I was like, ooh, they let me do it.
They let you do it. that's fair.
I'm in.
Okay, so tell me how this retreat came about and then what it's like. And I heard that it's closed, that the submissions have already happened. And anyway, tell me all about it.
Yes. So Tending the Garden came about because of working in all these mental health facilities and not seeing people that looked like me in the facilities. I actually have been wanting to do this for years and couldn't figure out what I wanted to do to help individuals. I did a 10-day silent retreat this year. I did Vipassana. It was the most amazing and scariest thing I've ever done. And the first day, I couldn't do anything else but sit with myself. So I created Tending the Garden in my head. So I had to hold it for like 12 days. And I knew that what I wanted for survivors was mental health tools and support. Body acceptance, because there's so much shame that comes with bodies after trauma. And I wanted to have sex ed. I also wanted it to be in a space where we could heal in nature and having water near. I wanted it to be a sober space so we could truly connect and learn and grow. And also I wanted it to be a space that people felt seen, supported, and heard. So specifically, Tending the Garden is for femmes of color. And people are like, well, why don't you say women? Because I am not the gatekeeper of what a woman is. We are open to non-binary folks. We're open to trans femmes. However, you identify as long as you identify as being feminine, we are open to you. So yeah, we did actually just close the applications on 12/12 at noon, 12/12/12, for my woo folks. And I let the individuals know on December 20th, we may have some spots opening up in January. So stay tuned, follow tendingthegarden.love to get updates. But I'm super excited to be able to create this. We have amazing educators that I have hand chosen to run these tracks. I'm actually not teaching because I want to be able to hold space and support individuals. I have a backup therapist on site. I have a spiritual person on site. I have a body movement person on site. So in totality, I have a staff of 9, including myself, that is going to be supporting these individuals as they are doing 3 days intensive, 1 day of self-care, because I think it's so important to give back to yourself and also mm-hmm. to calm down a little bit. I'm making sure, again, my background's mental health, so I'm making sure they have a discharge plan. They're going to go home with some free therapy. They're going to go home with me finding community for them in their area, with me doing all the footwork so they don't have to be like, oh, what do I do when I leave Costa Rica? Then what? I want them to go home and continue to heal and not just go back to possibly a space where the trauma is continuing to happen.
Right. There isn't like a discharge plan, as you put it, which is sort of like a mental health construction. Mm-hmm. People leave events that are intense and intimate and often experience a kind of drop or depression. Mm-hmm. But this seems to me like you have to have a plan because of all the things that you're going to deal with. Okay, we have to take another break. I have so many more questions about this. I do. I have more questions. But first, we're going to pay the bills with commercials. And when we come back, more on tending the garden and also resources for sexual assault survivors. So don't go anywhere. Hey everyone, it's Tristan, and it's time to listen up because we're going to talk about one of my very favorite subjects, porn. We all know that it's not hard to find porn on the internet, but finding porn that you like, that's a different story. Sometimes you can spend more time looking for a scene that you like than you actually spend watching it. And it can feel like a never-ending black hole of cliches, bad scripts, and plastic leather sofas. If you want to try something new with relatable storylines, realistic situations of very hot sex, and cinematic quality, then you need to check out the new LustCinema.com. Founded by Erica Lust, Lust Cinema is her new U.S. porn studio for lovers of cinema and sex. On Lust Cinema, you'll find original series and feature films shot by Erica herself and other U.S.-based female directors, as well as a huge catalog of content from other adult filmmakers. If you already know Erica Lust, then you know that she makes beautiful cinematic porn on X Confessions. So expect nothing less on her new Lust Cinema. You'll experience the whole feeling of sex, the passion and the pleasure. And on Lust Cinema, everyone's pleasure is equally important. Hear, hear to that. Erica wants Sex Out Loud listeners to experience her world of lust, so she's giving you a one-month membership for just $5. Visit www.lustcinema.com/Tristan to get your $5 month and start streaming now. That's lustcinema.com/Tristan. Lust Cinema. Great porn, better sex.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, did you know that you can call me anytime you want? Not that I'll like pick up the phone anytime you want, but you can call me and you can leave a message. You can ask a question. You can leave a comment. You can tell me about a guest you'd really love to hear. And I'm having a feeling that you people must have comments about this. And especially based on the last series of calls I got around survivor justice. So I would totally love to hear from you. You can call me anytime at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. So I'm talking today with trauma specialist, sex educator, podcast host, Jiminika Eborn. And Jiminika, we've been talking about your retreat, Tending the Garden.
Yes.
I'm really interested to hear this how much sort of infrastructure you've built. Many years ago, I was on the faculty of a kind of two-day institute that was about mm-hmm. sexuality. And I wasn't the main facilitator. I was just sort of there to do a piece of it. And the main facilitator kind of asked people to really dig deep into their own kind of sexual psyches and sexual experiences, especially kind of ones that have imprinted on them. And one of the things that happened that was like so upsetting to me was I felt like she cracked them open,
mm-hmm.
but then didn't like...
left them raw.
Yeah, didn't put
People
them
do
back
that often.
Together. And I've had that experience myself in therapy with a not great therapist where mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, after therapy, like I couldn't drive home, which they usually, you know, should close the circle. So how do you help people to crack open, but then make sure that they can go home and sort of function in their lives?
Yeah. Well, thinking about the retreat, so we will be doing different classes. So they will have different tracks that they will be attending, but also they will be having sit down time with our therapist on site. So I'm scheduling time for them. So it's not like, well, I don't want to bother anyone, because that's also a thing that survivors don't mm-hmm. want to bother people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, no, I got you, boo. Here's your time with the therapist. You're going to sit down and check in with them. And then also for me, I don't think people need to be religious, but I think they need to believe in something. To sometimes just make it through. So we do have a spiritual person that maybe will help them meditate or do their chakras and whatnot. And that's also going to be scheduled so that they have to do it. And it's like all these things that we're like, well, maybe I'll get to it. No, we're doing it. And then also I am running around and I'm checking in with people. And we also have provided enough time in between the different groups. And
oh, that's a thing too. When you don't have enough time to even just like process stuff.
Yeah. I think that's so important. We have scheduled time for them to process. If they want to go, we have a personal waterfall for us. If you want to go to the waterfall, go take some time. And I know I've gone to all these conferences and done all these things. And I'm like, there's not enough time. And I want them to have enough time because it's going to be a lot. But I also want them to not feel too overwhelmed that they're not able to process what they need to process.
I mean, there's barely like a quiet space at conferences.
There's
some
none.
Conferences are very good about it. Like there's a healing space or there's a quiet space, but that's the exception. That is not even the rule.
No, there's very, I've been to like two conferences and I was like, oh, but also they don't really tell you about it. So you got to accidentally fall into it. Yeah, no, we're not doing that.
I also want to ask you about the sort of embodied practices that you do with folks, that you might do at this retreat. We know that trauma lives in the body, and in this case, trauma happened to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering like what role embodiment and being in your body, like what role is there in this kind of like healing space?
Well, we have a whole class on just body forgiveness. and so it's going to be a lot of sitting down and being honest with ourselves. And a lot of times folks that I've seen and worked with, and even myself, have to forgive our bodies because we've blamed ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we talk about that. We're going to do some mirror work and actually look at ourselves, because I know I've avoided mirrors for a very long time. And now I'm finally like looking at them and realizing how much power it is in seeing myself and actually loving what I see and acknowledging that. So we're going to be doing all types of amazing things. Evian Whitney is going to be covering our body forgiveness track. And I gave her one of my favorite activities that I know she's going to use with them. And it's called body forgiveness, where literally you go head to toe or toe to head, however you want to do it. And you do like a body scan. But while you're doing it, you're actually forgiving parts of your body. For an example, like brain, I'm sorry we couldn't compute what was going on fast enough. Eyes, I'm sorry we couldn't see through the bullshit. And do it however you want, but actually forgiving yourself and acknowledging that it's not your fault. I've seen people just break down into tears from just the first part of, and then saying thank you for making me do this.
How do you handle when you ask someone to get into their body,
mm-hmm.
be in their body, when that itself is traumatic for them or triggering?
Yeah, I start slow. I again, meeting people where they are, I think is so important versus trying to push them and be like, well, it's day five, we should be here. No, check in with them, ask them questions. And I think that's so important to allow them to be more responsive and be like, hey, I don't know what's going on with my body. Okay, well, let's start with our fingertips. Do you feel this? What does that feel like for you? Or let's walk into some sand or some ground. Like, what does this feel like? What are the things you smell? It's slowly building up to allow the person to choose their journey. Because again, working with survivors, a lot of things have been taken from them. And so the whole thing for me with my work is allowing them to be back in control of themselves.
And are there, do you feel like people need specific tools? I mean, I know that we know that like talk therapy can only help so much with trauma, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm wondering what other kinds of tools you've employed or you've encouraged people to use.
Yeah. You know, we are sex educators and I love to tell people to take yourselves on a date and masturbate. For those, especially for those, most people come to me and they're like, I want to have sex again. I want to fornicate again. I'm like, okay, well, let's have a date with ourselves to see what our bodies react to and don't react to in a safe space and setting yourself up versus when you're with a partner. I think that's a tool in learning what your body likes or doesn't like or wants to try. I think that's really important. Also, something that I work on with individuals is learning how to say yes and no. And do it in a way that feels good for them, where they feel seen, supported, and heard. Because that's something most of us have never been taught, is how to say yes and actually say yes because we want to, or say no and actually do it in a way that we're like, no, like I'm not budging and I'm still very good in my no.
Right. Rather than, I think some people are good at saying no, but then there's like guilt, shame, anxiety, doubt, all this stuff comes with the no.
Yeah,
which kind of defeats the purpose because then you're like back in your head and also judging yourself.
Yeah, which is, I mean, being in your head is real wild. I know I am a self-sabotager, so I can talk myself out of anything.
Me too. And, yeah, I'm like, or talk myself into stuff that's like I shouldn't be even talking myself into.
I mean, both sides of it, right? I'll be like, was I really good? No, that was dumb. And other people are like, that was amazing. I'm like, was it though? And I think a lot of times when we were talking about like survivors being believed, it's because of the gaslighting, which we tend to internalize, which can be really hard when we're working on all of these things. So again, like teaching people how to navigate and also trust their instincts again. I think that's also really important for when I work with survivors. Because a lot of people are like, well, how do I know? What do I know? I slept with this person, or I didn't see this person was a horrible person beforehand. How will I ever be able to know? And it's a slow building process on trusting yourself again and having others support you while you're trusting yourself again. I think that's a tool.
Well, and it also occurs to me that, I mean, I just think it's interesting how you frame this consent piece, like of those sort of relearning of consent. First of all, for some people, it's learning consent, right? It's not relearning because no one teaches us consent and it's not part of sex education. And kids aren't taught about consent from day one. We know that. And we know where that's like put us as a culture, which is in, it's just most people don't understand consent. So the notion that consent would be sort of central as a tool for healing, for people to really get firm in their yes and get firm in their no. It seems to me like that's, if your consent has been violated, then you will question the basic tenets of consent.
Yeah. I think you just question everything at that point. Right? Like you're questioning yourself, you're questioning people around you, you're questioning consent. Is it real? Do people care about it? You're questioning your boundaries. Like it's just a lot of questions that you start spinning with.
Okay. I think we're going to take another break because that seems like a natural break. This is our last commercial break, people. I want to remind you that you can go to pleasurechest.com. They are, even though Christmas is over, they're having a bunch of deals through the end of the month. So through December 31st. So, and they're all on the homepage. So if you go to pleasuretest.com, you will see the deals. And it's also in the commercial, which you're going to listen to right now and take notes. So when we come back, we are going to continue this. If you have a question or a comment about this topic or anything else, remember you can call us at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. We'll be back. Hey everyone, it's the holiday season and there is so much going on at the Pleasure Chest, you should probably get a pen and take notes. First, their holiday kits are now in stock and they start at just $25. They come in beautifully wrapped gift boxes. And pleasure checks are back. Spend $100 and receive a pleasure check gift voucher for $15. Spend $150 and receive a check for $25. This is available in-store only through December 31st, and they're redeemable during any future store visit through March 31st, 2020. Fine print cannot be combined with any other offers or discounts. It's also time for 12 days of giveaways. The Pleasure Chest is ready to stock your stuffings with the latest and greatest new toys and a few classics. From December 14th to the 26th, check Pleasure Chest's social media, and you may have a chance to win. Follow them on Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores. Plus, there's 10% off all orders over $200 through January 1st, online only. And finally, free shipping from the 10th to the 19th, which is the last day to order if you want to get it by Christmas. Go to pleasurechest.com and take advantage of these amazing specials.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Jiminika Eborn, and she is a trauma specialist, a sex educator. Apparently, she's going back another time to school, so she'll tell us what she's doing there. You can find her at traumaqueen.love. Trauma Queen is the name of the podcast she created and hosts, which you should definitely listen to and subscribe to. You can also find out more about this retreat attendingthegarden.love. And she is on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Jiminika. And I'm going to spell that for you. J-I-M-A-N-E-K-I-A. So you should also follow her. Okay, well, so before, during the break, I asked you this question. I'm just going to do it like a brief one because we both only saw the first episode. But there is a Netflix series called Unbelievable, which begins with a sexual assault. And you're mad at it.
I'm mad at a lot of it.
And I also had like a lot of questions about it. But the one thing I think it might have done well is that it's sort, for me, it sort of showed like when you have multiple oppressions, it like it layers on and you have you get less and less support and you are believed less and less. Mm-hmm. This person is someone who was in foster care, who has been a quote like troubled teen, and all of that impacts the way that people deal with her. But tell me what you hated about it. I'm curious.
I hated how one of her foster mothers went behind her back and was like, I think she made it up. Like, how dare you? But also to her face, she was fully supporting her. And then I hated the way that they had two male police officers interrogating her so intensely that she changed her story multiple times only because they were calling her a liar. Mm-hmm. And like, there was no support there. I did like a thing.
Tell me what you liked.
I did like how they showed how hard it is for survivors. That's what I liked. I liked that it was honest of trying to tell your story and people not believing you, even the people that say they love you and are trying to understand. And I like that, you know, she didn't give up. From what I heard, it was a, you know, it was a good time. It was a great show as you went through it. But I was just so frustrated with the lack of support and trusting this person that's saying this happened to me.
Well, the idea just that you have to tell your story to like every single person over and over and over again from the beginning, like they can't just read the fucking notes.
Hello.
it's weird because you could read the notes and then say, oh, can you clarify this or can you clarify that? But the fact that she has to tell it over and over, it's like makes it seem like she's the criminal or she's the mm-hmm. sort of person of interest. Mm-hmm. And she better get her story straight, which is also, she's totally traumatized. So the one thing that was super believable to me was that she just, it's like her brain was working overtime. It made sense to me that she was changing her story.
That's
because
normal.
I felt like they were interrogating her, like you said. They were not questioning her. They were interrogating her. And it was like so stressful that I was like, you're going to give up, aren't you? Yeah, it seems like you should give up because there's like, this is going nowhere.
Yeah. It was so many people against her that I was like, you know what? This is hard to watch. Like, I get it. And I know there's levels to healing and all the things. And I also understand that this is true and this is a real situation. And I think for me as someone that, you know, tends to spend a lot of time around survivors and is a survivor, I know how hard it is just to be seen mm-hmm. and for people to acknowledge it. And I was just like, ah, stop it. And it also didn't show anyone trusting that she knew what she was saying. And I think I've said that already, but it's like no one trusted that she knew what happened to her own body. Like she wasn't there.
Right. Right. Okay. So this brings up the point also, part of what's at issue in that first episode, that's why I like it sort of illustrates a bunch of stuff, is that she has two foster mothers. One of them is played by the brilliant Bridget Everett, who I love. And they begin to sort of doubt her story based on how she's behaving, based on past behavior, based on the fact that they find her to be sexual, which she is. And that also impacts like how she feels then when she goes and tells her story. She's like, people don't believe me. So this begs the question, how can allies support survivors?
Yes. Oh, that's what I love to tell people. First, listen to them. Let's believe them. If someone is coming to you, let's not follow it up with a question unless it's how can I support you? That's the only question you should be asking them, not what you were wearing, where were you, why didn't you tell me sooner? None of that is what we need. Just asking them what they need. And also, if they don't know in that moment, allowing them to know that you're still there to support them. Another thing that I like to tell people that hopefully that you are transitioning from an ally to an accomplice, where you're actually doing the work versus just saying it. So I've been doing a lot of work around that, is doing your own research. And I always tell people, my Google works like your Google, and mm-hmm. you can Google all types of information. And maybe there's things that they don't know about. Maybe find them some resources in your area for when they are ready to get support. Also, stop pushing people to go to the police department because there is so much re-traumatization that goes on there. You know, offer, maybe they don't know that they can go get a SART kit to get that DNA, mm-hmm. You know, all the samples and whatnot. Maybe offer that to them, but also don't force them to do anything that they're not ready to do because they're going to shut down. And it's not helpful at all. Have a conversation. If you really care about these individuals, check in with them and actually, you know, listen to what they're saying versus something that you saw in Law and Order SVU. Like that may not be applicable to this person.
Right, right. Because Mariska Hargitay is not coming to fight for you. I mean, I'm sorry, but she's not.
She's not. She has a lovely organization that supports survivors.
Yes,
but she's
she
not coming.
The actress herself, but she's not coming to support you. No. Well, I'm also wondering about like the long term, because I feel like this is true about crisis, you know, medical crisis, injury, trauma, which is that everyone sort of like hops on you and is like there for you like right away. Mm-hmm. But And that's great. And you need that. But then it's like 2 weeks later, 2 months later, 2 years later. How do you, without being kind of invasive, how do you like check back in?
Mm-hmm. I think, again, just asking people, like, how would you like to, if it comes up for you, like, hey, I know this situation happened to you. Also, don't name it for them. However, they'd like to name what has happened to them. Some people like to say that they're victims. Some people like to say that they're survivors. You know, asking them how they want to identify and asking, like, how would you like to be checked in with? Again, ask people. It's so much easier when you actually ask people versus forcing things on them. Like, hey, would you want me to check in with you? Like, is it okay if I check in with you? See how that looks for them and feels for them.
And what if they don't know? Like, what if the answer is, I don't know?
Yeah. You can say, you know what? Is it okay if I check back in? If that, because you don't know right now. Because it also allows for that person to know that they're not alone and it's okay to not know what they're feeling right now and or what they need. But when they do, that they have someone that's on their side.
I also think you can't predict how people are going to behave or how the trauma is going to show up.
True.
And so I feel like they're either going by law and order or they're going by themselves. Like, well, if this happened to me, I would do X and want Y. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a trap because you're not centering the person who it happened to.
Correct. That's why I say this isn't about you. Like, take yourself out of it. Remember, like when I was a rape crisis counselor, I checked my, as I would say, I checked my shit at the door. Whatever's going on in my life doesn't go into this threshold because it's not about me. Like, yeah, you ask them what they need.
Right. But I would think people naturally sort of try to relate and then they go into the space of like, this is how I would feel, which does a disservice to someone who's feeling a totally different way.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I would feel upset and depressed. And this person's like, I want to run someone over with my car.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and so it's like, it's a disconnect.
I think, you know, when that happens, cause it happens a lot, just say, you know what? And even if you say something where you're like, well, I would do, you can say, I apologize. Acknowledge that you messed up, because I think accountability is also great in this situation. But acknowledging like, hey, maybe I don't know all the things, but I want to, you know, support you however I can. And also being honest that you don't know all the things can be helpful.
Right. What about the urge to fix? So you said like, oh, you can pull these resources together. But you should, so you could do that, but then you're not going to volunteer them. Is that right?
No, you sit on them.
You sit on them. Okay.
You can let them know that you have them when they're ready. Hey, I have some stuff when you're ready. Just let me know. And I know there's a lot of us, as like, especially as healers, that are like, I want to fix it. But also remember and check yourself and where that's coming from. Is it about them or is it about you?
Right. Right. Ask back to the centering. Question. Back to the centering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, this is really good advice. And I just really appreciate you. I appreciate you doing this work out in the world because it's so critical. And I appreciate you coming on the show when you're on vacation. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And Jiminika's on the internets. So all you have to do is really just Google her name. Just like she said earlier, her Google works as well as your Google.
It's true.
This is the last show of 2019. That's kind of exciting. I want to thank everyone who makes it possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set. A-Rod has been my engineer for 3 years, and this is his last show with me. So I'm sad to see A-Rod go. He really... oh. There's so many things I want to say about A-Rod. He just really paid attention. And I felt like, A-Rod, you also evolved as a person and learned new things and were willing to learn new things through my show. And I really fucking appreciate that. Andrew's coming in to take his place and I'm trying to reserve judgment. Okay. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. It's going to be the very first show of 2020. Who will be the guest? It's going to be a surprise. Until then, you can reach me on social media. I am at Tristan Terramino across all platforms. On Twitter, the show is at Sex Out Loud Radio. And please enjoy your new year and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Terramino on Voice America Variety.